Thank you very much. We'll move to question time, and Senator Birmingham, you have the call.
Thanks, President. Niceties aside. President, my question is to the Minister for Trade and Tourism, Senator Farrell. During question time on Monday, Senator Farrell made comments in response to a question from Senator Cox. He subsequently withdrew the comments and this morning apologised for the comments. The Minister also, during question time on Monday, it was a busy one for the Minister in terms of such statements, made another controversial statement, unnecessarily and erroneously remarking that the United States, and he said he was not sure the United States is our most trusted ally. To date, the Minister has made no public statement to clarify these remarks, despite clarifying his other controversial statements from question time on Monday. Will he now take this opportunity to correct the record and apologise for those comments?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Senator Farrell. Order.
Thank you, President. Thank Senator Birmingham for his question. And look, if I ever do make a mistake, in this place, it doesn't happen very often, I have to say, but on the odd occasions that I do, Senator McKenzie, I am always happy to own up to mistakes that I made, and in reference to the first part of your question, Senator Birmingham, I did this morning, as I had done on Monday afternoon, go and talk to Senator Cox and indicate to her that I did not intend to make the comment in the way in which it was understood, and I quickly spoke to her about it to apologise, and to any other person in the chamber who may have felt aggrieved by my my comments, and then again I repeated that today publicly on the record. In terms of the other comments I made on Monday, I am a little bit puzzled by the I would almost call it the obsession by Senator Birmingham about the issues of the closeness of our allies. In this troubling time, when we see sort of wars right around the world, we need very many, many close allies. Of course, the United States are amongst our closest.
Thank you, Senator Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Birmingham, first supplementary.
Well, President, supplementary question. The Prime Minister remarked during his state visit to the United States last year that, and I quote, "I regard the relationship as second to none of the relationships that I have around the world, or indeed domestically for that matter. It's a relationship of trust." Minister, you declined the opportunity to set the record straight. Are you deliberately setting about contradicting the Prime Minister when you voluntarily choose to talk down the closeness of our relationship with the US, or are you just being careless?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Birmingham for his first supplementary question. As I say, Senator Birmingham does seem to have somewhat of an obsession about this particular issue. I'm on all fours with the Prime Minister. We work as a team, whether it's the Foreign Minister or the Prime Minister, or for that matter, the Defence Minister. In this government, we work as a team, and we have consistent policies, whether they are towards the United States or to New Zealand, or for that matter, to China. And we're going to continue to do that. What we as a government have done over the last almost 2 years now is
to... Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Birmingham, second supplementary.
Thanks, President. President, under the Five Eyes Agreement, Australia and the US share the most sensitive of intelligence secrets with one another. The success of the AUKUS partnership hinges on the United States trusting Australia with their most sensitive defence secrets. Why is the minister unwilling to stand in this chamber and state the United States is Australia's most trusted ally?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Senator Farrell.
Thank you, President. Again, I sort of repeat that the Senator seems somewhat obsessed about this issue. We need, in these troubling times, we need a whole lot of close allies. And of course, United States is there. Which government forged the alliance between the United States and Australia? It was the Curtin government. Who has progressed the AUKUS?
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Sorry. I can barely hear the minister because of the loud interjections. Thank you, Senator Cash. When I'm calling the Senate to order, the loud interjections from my left. Minister Farrell.
Pointing out to Senator Birmingham that you've picked one country in the Five Eyes, but of course Five Eyes consists of the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. We need
you,
all
Minister.
Of these countries.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Sheldon.
My question.
Order.
My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. I refer to the Independent Reserve Bank's decision to leave interest rates unchanged at 4.35%, a relief for 3.3 million Australians with a mortgage. In a statement released following the decision, the RBA board confirmed that inflation continues to moderate and the task of returning inflation to sustainable levels is its highest priority. What is the Albanese Labor government's response to the decision taken by the independent RBA board yesterday?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Sheldon for the question and his focus on cost of living pressures and how we can alleviate those pressures on Australian households. It's great to get a question like that, even if we... imagine an issue like that in this place. The Independent Reserve Bank met yesterday, as Senator Sheldon said, and kept rates on hold at 4.35%. I can't hear you, Senator McKim, other than a loud kind of rabble in the corner. Interest rates have been on hold now for 4 months, so this is welcome news. It is welcome news, particularly for mortgagees who've been feeling the brunt of those interest rate increases over the last 18 months or so, that of course started under the former government when inflation in a quarterly sense was at its highest. The board's statement was clear that inflation continues to moderate in line with their forecasts, but returning inflation to the target band is and remains the priority. And of course, managing the inflation challenge in the economy remains a key priority for the Albanese government as well. What the decision yesterday shows is that good progress is being made in the fight against inflation. It has come off significantly since its peak in 2022, and I think demonstrates that the work we're doing on the fiscal side is supporting the work that the bank has been doing in trying to better balance demand and supply across the economy. When you look at what we've been able to do across the budget, the first surplus in 15 years, very important in terms of managing inflation. We've turned a $78 billion deficit into a $22 billion surplus, and at the same time we've been able to do that, we've been able to make important investments to alleviate or support, reduce some of the pressure people have been feeling on their household budgets, whether it be energy bill relief.
Oh, thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. The RBA's decision to leave interest rates on hold this month will help Australian households dealing with cost of living pressures. The Minister has said previously that the Albanese Labor government is working hand in hand with the Independent Reserve Bank. How is the government's economic and budget strategy tackling inflation, and how is the government's approach delivering relief for Australians?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Sheldon for the question. I'm sure Senator McKim will get his opportunity later. We are delivering the approach the government has taken is to make sure that we are not increasing pressure on inflation, but we're reducing the pressure on inflation across the economy, but that we are able to provide households and Australians with that cost of living relief. And we've seen from the ABS data where our policies have directly reduced CPI, whether it be in our rent assistance or our energy bill relief, and that is important in helping this fight against inflation. Of course, we've had other areas where we've made targeted investments, for example, in making medicines cheaper, in supporting families with childcare costs, and of course with our housing plans to make increase the supply of housing across Australia.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. It is clear that the Albanese Labor government is focused on working for all Australians in strengthening the economy and tackling inflation. Why is the upcoming May budget an important opportunity to continue delivering the investments our economy needs while fighting inflation?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sheldon, for that. Well, like our first two budgets, the May budget will be responsible. It will be affordable and it will be suited to the economic circumstances of the time. So our economic and budget strategy revolves around those three key areas of providing cost of living relief without adding to inflation, as I said earlier, repairing our budget and the supply chains that we've seen in particular over the last couple of years, and driving our growth agenda, our economic reform agenda, to drive the future economy. So, you know, obviously the centrepiece of the budget will be those tax cuts that have passed Parliament. Very important, very significant investment to make sure that people are keeping more of what they earn. That the government, obviously, that will be a key part of the budget, and those measures will flow from the 1st of July. And we'll do whatever else we can responsibly within the budget parameters to support
Thank
Australian
you, Minister.
Families.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Home Affairs, Senator Watt. The Australian Federal Police confirmed in Senate estimates last night that 152 former detainees have now been released into the community. Minister, how many of them are currently wearing electronic monitoring devices?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Patterson. Well, I can only assume, Senator Patterson, that given you, I presume, were at Senate estimates with the AFP last night, that you would have asked them that question. And they are obviously in a much better position than any minister of the government to provide that level of detail. We have said that we have confidence.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
On a point of order of direct relevance, Madam President, the AFP said they couldn't answer that question, which is why I'm asking the responsible minister to answer that question.
Senator Patterson, I'm sure you're aware that's now gone into the area of debating. The minister is being directly relevant to your question. Minister Watt, please continue.
So we have consistently said that we have complete confidence in the Community Protection Board that was established by this government, comprised of former and serving police and other national security officials, to provide advice to government on how this particular cohort should be treated, to whom there should be bracelets attached and other conditions attached. And of course, it's also worth remembering that the reason this situation has arisen is because of a High Court decision that overturned many years of precedent.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. On direct relevance, it was a tightly worded question. There was no preamble. It is seeking a factual piece of information. Could you please draw the minister's attention back to the question?
I believe the minister is being relevant. I will remind him he should address the question and not what others may have done in government, but he is being relevant to the question. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. I'm almost certain that the Minister for Immigration and the Minister for Home Affairs have also made public the government's intention to ensure that the Community Protection Board, via the Department of Home Affairs, will soon be issuing a community protection update containing the sorts of details that Senator Patterson is seeking. This government does support transparency and supports those figures being provided on a regular basis through an orderly process through the Community Protection Board that we have established. We've also made clear that at all times we'll be guided by the protection of Australian people and adherence to the law. We've seen that laughable situation where various Liberal and National Party members and senators have demanded that this government ignore the law disobey rulings of the High Court. This government has no intention of doing so. We will adhere to the law and we will keep the Australian people updated through that community protection update.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. The Australian reported this morning that a convicted rapist released into the community following the NZYQ case has had his ankle bracelet removed after his lawyers challenged the legal basis of the restrictions imposed on him. How many other rapists are loose in the community without electronic monitoring?
Minister Watt.
The decisions that the government has made on all of these matters have been informed by the advice of the Community Protection Board. The Community Protection Board comprises former and serving police and other security officials who this government has complete faith in. If Senator Patterson or any of the other interjecting senators want to criticise this government for the way that we've handled this, what they are actually doing is criticising people like former police commissioners who we are relying on for advice about all of these matters. If we want to have trumped up senators who want to spend their time scaring the Australian community, if we want to rely on their advice rather than former police commissioners and people who actually take into account community safety issues each and every day, well, that's a matter for the opposition. But the government is prepared to and willing to rely on that advice from high-quality personnel.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. The Minister for Immigration has repeatedly promised that the released detainees are being continuously monitored in the community. Yeah. Given the government has allowed at least 36 former detainees and at least one rapist free in the community without electronic monitoring, how can that possibly be the case?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Watt.
Well, I know it's in the opposition's interest to whip up fear amongst the Australian community because by whipping
Minister
up fear...
Watt, Minister
they
Watt, please resume your seat. Order! Order! Order. Minister, please continue.
President, as I say, I know it's in the political interests of the opposition to whip up fear amongst the Australian community because that distracts then attention from the fact that the opposition has absolutely no plan whatsoever for dealing with the cost of living pressures that Australians are in. It distracts attention from the fact that the now opposition of the leader and former Home Affairs Minister, presided
over... Minister
Watt,
please resume your seat. I will sit the minister down for as long as the interjections continue. You are disorderly. There are other opportunities during the sitting of the Senate for you to make whatever contributions you like, but right now you are to listen in respectful silence. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. So that does distract attention from the fact that the Leader of the Opposition, as the Home Affairs Minister, presided over a corrupt immigration system that has been described as such in a number of reports now, a completely broken system. The point about where these people are and the level of monitoring, I direct the opposition to the comments from the AFP Acting Deputy Commissioner Nichols, who said in Senate estimates, I don't think there's any difficulty in knowing where they are. So again, we have the opposition criticising AFP personnel
you, Minister,
for political gain.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Waters.
Thanks, President. And I take the opportunity to add my congratulations to Senator Wong for her nuptials on the weekend. My question is to Minister Gallagher, representing the Health Minister. 2 weeks ago, the government released the Gender Equality Strategy, which said that the government will consider reforms to make access to sexual and reproductive health care easier. Well, we know what reforms are needed because in May of last year, the Senate tabled the report for Universal Access to Reproductive Health Care Inquiry, which had 36 recommendations. The government response to these recommendations is now 7 months overdue. What is the explanation for the government's inaction on women's health?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Waters for the question. And I don't accept the proposition that's been put at the end of that question. The government has been doing an enormous amount of work through Minister Carney in the area of women's health, whether it be working through the Women's Health Advisory Council that she established, or delivering the endometriosis and pelvic pain clinics that she's been leading, 22 clinics already open, investing in research and women's health. There is the Senate committee report, as you say, which had a number of recommendations, and the government is considering that and finalising its response. And I have been working closely with Minister Carney as she finalises some of her thinking about priorities in women's health. You'll note that in the National Gender Equality Strategy, women's health or health was one of the key areas identified in that strategy, one of the pillars around a focus to drive gender equality, acknowledging the gendered impact of access to health services, including reproductive health care services across the country, and some of the difference in access to services that exist depending on where you live. So we are using that report, Senator Waters. We will respond to that report, but it is aligning with a lot of work. It is running alongside a lot of work that the government is doing in the areas of women's health. There was an important announcement this morning by Minister Carney around midwives and being able to use full scope of practice. Now, that has been a reform that's been around for a long time. We are making our moves on that, again, improving access to women's health services. But we will be responding to the report as required.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Waters, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. At the Women's Health Summit last Thursday, multiple women's health experts endorsed the inquiry's recommendations to make reproductive health care more affordable and accessible. Will the government commit to implementing the inquiry's recommendations in full?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Waters for the supplementary question. As I said in my first question, we have the recommendations in the report before us. We are currently considering those recommendations. We accept that there is a lot of support for those recommendations across the community, and you know, except that there was a lot of stakeholders involved in that work that finalised that report. But we are, we will respond to it. And we take this area, we take women's health very seriously. We have a minister essentially dedicated to the work in that space. Every day she is out there either meeting with women's health organisations or announcing a new service that we are implementing, whether it be those pelvic pain clinics, whether it be working with states and territories, whether it be the announcement that the minister made this morning, and we will respond to that report.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Waters, second supplementary.
Thanks very much, President. When will the government stop making women wait and finally implement the inquiry's recommendations to make reproductive health care more affordable and accessible?
Minister Gallagher.
We're not making women wait. The work that the government is doing is about improving access to health services for all women, whether it be the tripling of the bulk billing rate, for example. We know that women will be significant beneficiaries of that, if not for themselves, for their children as well as the majority primary health care or carer for children. So all of those decisions we're taking in the budget have gender analysis that underpins them. We understand the impact that a number of them have on women, but the work, I cannot commend the work of Minister Carney more. She is an extraordinary minister. She has done more for women's health in 18 months than we saw under the previous decade, by far, and she has more to do. But opening those pain clinics, the research she's doing, the announcement she made today, the stakeholders she's engaging with, and there will be further announcements as she completes some of that work before
her. Thank you, Minister. Senator Grogan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator Wong. Can the Minister please inform the Senate how the Albanese Labor Government's energy plan is stabilising energy prices after a global crisis?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Grogan for her question, and it's great to have a question on this side, another question on this side on the cost of living. I've been away for a period of time and I've come back and we're still back where we were with the government, the Labor government, focused on cost of living and the issues that people are confronted by, trying to make sure we do all we can to ease the cost of living, and those opposite, again, trying to whip up fear and division. So some things don't change. But look, there was some good news for electricity customers yesterday. The draft default market offer, which is the maximum price customers can be charged under standard contracts, is stabilising and trending downwards. Yeah. And this comes after the biggest global energy crisis in 50 years. And the default market offer, the draft offer, shows price reductions in most states and territories, up to 10% reduction for some small business. They don't like it, do they? They don't like the good news. And more than 7% reduction for some households. Now, this is encouraging news, but we know how tough people have been doing it. We know families and business have still been doing it tough, which is why we on this side urgently capped skyrocketing coal and gas prices during the crisis. It's why we on this side ensured there was $3 billion in direct bill relief provided for households and small businesses. By contrast, what happened? They voted against it. Yeah, so not only do they not ask questions about cost of living, but they voted against Labor's plan to help Australians with increasing energy prices, which were increasing in great part, not only for global reasons, but because those opposite did not have a plan for over 10 years. Those opposite, Mr Dutton has given up on cheaper electricity for Australians. They have no plan. And they vote against plans by this government to reduce the energy.
Senator Grogan, first supplementary.
Thank you. It's good to hear those prices coming down. Noting the recent data suggests Australia's emissions are down, and thanks to the increase in renewables, how is the Albanese Labor government supporting Australia's transition, and what impact is this going to have on power prices?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
Thank you. Well, recent data from the greenhouse gas inventory showed emissions in the last quarter of last year were lower than in the same period in the year prior. In fact, they're 25% below June 2005 levels, the base year for our targets under the Paris Agreement. Australia's renewable surge helped to deliver a 71% decrease in wholesale electricity prices over this period, while also driving down emissions. There's been record investment in batteries and large-scale storage, $4.9 billion in new financial commitments, and more rooftop solar systems installed across the country. Now, we have more work to do to get more renewables into the system, but the evidence is clear. No matter how much Senator Canavan rails against it, the best way to deliver clean, cheap, reliable, resilient energy is to ensure there is more renewable energy in the system. Meanwhile, they're off over there on their nuclear fantasy.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Grogan, second supplementary.
Can the minister please explain to the Senate how the Albanese Labor government has been acting based on what experts have been saying about the importance of renewable energy? And to your earlier point, can you also step out for us why nuclear power isn't a sound option for this country?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
The Albanese government's plan is supported by the independent advice of the CSIRO and the Australian Energy Market Operator. And they confirm that the lowest cost plan for a reliable energy grid is world-leading renewables like solar and wind, firmed with batteries, pumped hydro, flexible gas and transmission. That's the way towards reliability and more affordable electricity prices. Correct. Meanwhile, what we have on the other side is Mr Dutton's nuclear fairy tale. We know, and experts have clearly said, that the plan that those opposite are touting will increase bills, will cost taxpayers billions, will risk the reliability of the grid, and it won't be delivered on time. What a great plan from the people who gave us 22 failed plans in government. They've got another failed plan to come up with. It's a guaranteed energy reliability crisis. That's what they're promoting. That's what they are, the
party
of higher prices and less reliability.
Has expired. Senator Hanson.
Thank you very much. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Indigenous Australia, Senator Gallagher. Labor's record immigration is directly responsible for the housing and rental crisis affecting millions of Australians, yet your government has just announced $4 billion to be spent on new housing and maintenance for Indigenous Australians only in the Northern Territory. How does the government justify spending $4 billion on less than 0.3% of the population, approximately 76,000, when you only allocated $10 billion for the rest of Australia with your useless Housing Future Fund that is more about attention politics than real meaningful outcomes?
Thank you, Senator Hanson. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, it's incorrect to say that there's only $10 billion in housing measures across Australia. We have a package of about 17 different policies, which I'm happy to go through, but they add up to over $20 billion worth of investment into housing. We have inherited a housing crisis coming into government. There was no focus on increasing supply under the former government. There was no interest from the Commonwealth government in social and affordable housing. And yes, we also recognise that at the same time that we make all of those additional investments through programs like the National Housing Accord, like the Social Housing Accelerator, by the New Homes Bonus, by the Housing Support Program, by the work we're doing with the states and territories on a national homelessness and housing agreement, whether it be through the investments in Housing Australia, whether it be through the increase in Commonwealth rent assistance, which we have provided, whether it's through the Help to Buy scheme, the Home Guarantee scheme, the extra money we've provided for homelessness funding, all of that is happening at the same time that we are making some additional investments in Northern Territory housing, recognising the particular circumstances that exist there, including poor housing quality, significant overcrowding that's happening in many communities, and the fact that housing and providing suitable housing and appropriate housing delivers additional benefits. For example, people are able to, once they have housing, able to go and get work, support their families, and it is an important investment, and we're very pleased to be making that investment, finding room in the budget for that investment at the same time that we, without the support of those opposite in this chamber, doing what we can across the board in housing.
Thank
more
you,
generally.
Minister. Senator Hanson, first supplementary.
History tells us maintenance is often required within 3 months on these homes in remote communities being built, raising questions about the suitability of this housing. These houses are not looked after and are sometimes destroyed at ongoing cost to taxpayers in the millions. Will the minister please explain how the government justifies building 270 houses in remote areas at the cost of $400 million a year, or about $1.5 million per house, when your useless Housing Future Fund only allocates $83,000 per house?
Thank you, Senator Hanson. The time for asking your question has expired, Minister.
Thank you, President. Well, I don't accept that the Housing Australia Future Fund is useless. In fact, it is supporting a number of programs now in conjunction with all of those other programs that I've just outlined, to increase the supply of social and affordable housing more generally, and through other programs improve people's ability to get into the housing market to purchase their own home. So I don't accept that at all. In terms of the commitment into the Northern Territory has the highest level of overcrowding in the country. The investment that we've announced is a 10-year commitment, and it includes not only the construction of those houses to be built every year, 270, but also to fund repairs and maintenance over time. And I know that from the work that the Minister for Indigenous Australians is doing with the Minister for Housing and led by the Prime Minister in working with the Northern Territory Government, appropriate building materials and modern and good housing is fundamental to the success of this program.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Hanson, second supplementary.
Will the Minister also please explain how the government is helping to close the gaps by building homes in remote areas away from jobs, education and health facilities, and admit that you are not closing the gaps but costing the taxpayers billions of dollars to keep Aboriginal Australians on welfare dependency with no hope for their future?
Thank you, Senator Hanson. Minister Gallagher.
Well, I don't accept that at all, Senator Hanson. I just do not accept that and the proposition you put. And I think, and I thought, everyone in this chamber accepted that closing the gap and the work that goes around, that is being done about closing the gap is a shared commitment across this parliament. And we are not making the gains that we would have hoped, and that's why our focus is on jobs through the work that Minister Burney is leading, and our focus is on housing and it is on health. And it is to make sure that where First Nations Australians live, particularly in those remote communities, that they have adequate and appropriate housing. And as I said, all of the evidence shows when there is adequate and appropriate housing, it delivers other social benefits as well, whether it be access to education, whether it be access to employment, whether it be around supporting family members who require care. All of those,
thank
housing
you, Minister,
is fundamental to that.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Macdonald.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Resources, Senator Farrell. Today's gas statement of opportunities release confirms that the government has not averted the looming supply shortfalls for 2026 and that Gippsland Basin gas wells are rapidly decreasing. Has the government released any new offshore exploration permits since Minister King's press release on the 24th of August 2022?
Thank you, Senator Macdonald. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, thank you, President, and thank Senator Macdonald for her question. The issue, or the fundamental issue that you raise, of course, is the reliability of gas supplies, particularly as they relate to the east coast of Australia. And of course, what happened was when we came to government almost 2 years ago, we discovered that the inaction of the former government over those previous 10 years had left Australia vulnerable to a shortage of available gas. And of course, what we immediately started to do, and particularly under Minister Madeleine King, was to set about to ensure that we had a continued reliable supply of gas.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Macdonald.
Relevance, please draw the Minister back to the specific question about new offshore petroleum exploration permits since 2022.
Thank you, Senator Macdonald. You did talk about the Gippsland and other pieces of information in your question. I will continue to listen to the Minister, but I do believe he's being relevant. Minister Farrell.
President, look, the reality is we were left in the worst of possible positions as a result of the inaction of the former government to deal with the shortage of supply. Now, this government, unlike the Greens, who'd like to switch off gas today and leave us with a shortfall. This government is determined that gas will be part of the transition to a renewable future. There's no minister in this government that understands that better than Minister King. And she is working to
thank
ensure...
Thank you, Minister Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Macdonald, first supplementary.
We saw earlier this month that Sealy International would be axing 125 Australian jobs after Sorbent also cut 70 jobs in Victoria thanks to oppressive Labor anti-gas policies and the resulting instability of gas supply. Will you apologise to those workers who have lost their jobs because of your mismanaged gas policies?
Thank you, Senator Macdonald. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Macdonald for her first supplementary question. It's a sad day when any worker loses their job, and I've had plenty of examples over a long year in a great number of years in the union movement of having to deal with people who lose their jobs, Senator Macdonald, and there's no worse experience than losing your job. But these circumstances that you're talking about, Senator Macdonald, did not occur overnight. And perhaps you didn't hear the answer to my first question, but it was the inaction of the former government in this space that's left us in this situation.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Macdonald, second supplementary.
Will the Albanese government change policies to bring in more domestic gas production so that no more Australian jobs will be lost because of gas shortfalls?
Thank you, Senator Macdonald. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. I don't accept the fundamental proposition of that question, President. We understand, this government understands, Minister King, Madeleine King, understands better than anyone just how important the reliability of gas is going to be in the transition to net zero. That's why we've had to implement so many policies to make up for the inaction of the former government. And let me tell you, Senator Macdonald, under Madeleine King, we have a safe pair of hands. She understands the issues. She understands why it's so important to make that transition. And she is going to be delivering for Australians.
And thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. This month, your government announced it would pay superannuation on government-funded paid parental leave. You described the measure as an investment in women's economic security. Not that I need to remind you that you said in your media release, but you said that women's economic security is a key part of our economic plan. Can you tell me a bit more about why it's so important to invest in improving the retirement savings of women?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Tyrrell for the question. And it is an important announcement that we made. We know that women retire with between 22% to 32% less superannuation than men at the point of retirement, and we know that women at retirement age are a significant group that fall into poverty. So it's part of the fact that throughout their careers, paid and as carers, primarily carers in families, that they have had either career breaks or been out of the workforce for long periods of time, and during that time where they've not been earning, for the time they've been caring, they have not been accumulating superannuation. This works in conjunction with the fact that highly feminised industries have traditionally been less valued and lower paid. So some of the work we're doing in aged care and some of the care sectors, including early childhood education and care, goes to that point as part of our economic plan. So the point I was making in the media release was this is one part of our response to driving gender equality and better economic equality for women. I think over time it's become an issue not only of less money in retirement age, it's also become a point of tension about people feeling that the caring role that women play primarily is not valued across the economy. And so that decision, I think, addressed both of those points. And we know it won't. It's not a silver bullet, of course, to to, you know, for someone retiring tomorrow that it's going to address that, but it will make inroads into the superannuation gender pay gap there. But at the same time we're doing that, we have to do a whole range of other work in other areas to make sure that we're getting women having
that Minister,
fair
the
crack
time
at
for
super as well.
Expired. Senator Tyrrell, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. As part of the announcement, the Treasurer said that paying super on government payments would mean a more dignified and secure retirement for more Australian women. Given that 90% of recipients of carer payments have no earnings and 70% are women, would you consider paying superannuation on carer payments to also be an investment in women's economic security, which would also mean a more dignified and secure retirement for more Australian women, or is it different for carers?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I think I've been on the record saying there's no shortage of ideas that the government would like to fund if we had room to do that. And I acknowledge that once we've addressed this anomaly, which is the only workplace entitlement that hasn't have superannuation paid on it, that, you know, the obviously there will be pressure and interest and advocacy around extending arrangements as we're getting in PPL more generally. You know, we've just yesterday extended it to 6 months, and I think I got the first question I got on that at the a press conference was, when is it going to be 12 months? So I accept that, you know, when you make inroads into these things, that then comes what's next. The government will be looking at all of these matters. We're working with the Economic Inclusion Advisory Committee. They will have provided their advice to government about what's the next best opportunity we can to support and drive women's economic equality.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Paying super on carer payments to a 30-year-old woman would reduce her pension payments by nearly $3 in real terms for every dollar in super paid. She'll retire with greater economic security and she'd save you money in the process. Genuinely, can you explain to me what the downsides of this proposal are? This helps the budget, this helps carers, and it means nobody's going to ever have to retire into poverty for the crime of caring for their dying parent in her last year of life.
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Farrell, beg your pardon, Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, one of the recommendations of the Women's Economic Equality Task Force was to look at the interactions between payments, the tax system, and other policy measures the government provides in supporting women across their working life, and that includes, I shouldn't say working in the paid sense and not working in the unpaid sense. And so that, you know, that is work that we are looking at because we are interested in how all the intersections work together and can there can be a disincentive for certain activity based on what it means for other payments. So carers payments, one of those, but other income support payments as well. We've got a long way to go to address some of the gaps that exist. We can't do it all overnight or in one budget or in one decision, but we are absolutely committed to driving this forward and to making sure that women get a better opportunity across the economy.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Billy.
Thank you. My question is to the Special Minister of State, Senator Farrell. I refer to Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine and the impact the war is having on the country, its sovereignty, its people and, of course, its democracy, especially after we've just witnessed a shocking so-called election in Russia. Can the Minister tell the Senate how the Albanese Labor government is supporting Ukraine to protect its democracy in the face of Russia's illegal invasion?
Thank you, Senator Billick. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Billick for her question and her very deep interest in the fate of the people of Ukraine, the brave people of Ukraine. For more than 2 years since Russia's illegal and immoral invasion, Australia continues to strongly support Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. We stand in solidarity with the Ukrainian community. And recently, along with Senator Birmingham, I was proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with members of the South Australian Ukraine community on the steps of the State Parliament. The reality of Ukrainians is that their country is under attack and elections have had to be deferred. But its Central Election Commission is preparing for the delivery of the first elections after this conflict have ended. Yesterday, I was privileged to meet with the chairman of the Central Election Commission, Mr. Ole Diladenko, and Mr. Sergei Positivi, members of the Central Election Commission. The Commission has a complex and challenging job in delivering the first election after the war with Russia has ended. And the Albanese Labor government is committed to supporting Ukraine in this, a goal that I'm confident all members of the Albanese government are completely behind. Sadly, given the comments of some Liberal senators in this place about the Ukraine's fight against Russia, it is clear the same unanimous support does not exist in other parties. However, President, I'm proud to have pledged my support for Ukraine in ensuring that they can again hold fair and safe elections in an effort to restore effective democracy to the Ukraine and its people.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Billick, first supplementary.
Thank you for that answer, Minister. And I do hope all of us here echo your support to the Commission to see elections being able to be held in Ukraine. Australia's democracy is strong, and the Australian Electoral Commission does important work with other countries to support democracy internationally. Can the Minister also share with the Chamber how the Albanese Labor government supports democratic processes internationally?
Thank you, Senator Billick. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. Again, thanks, Senator Billick, for her important question. The challenges to Ukraine are apparent, and yesterday's visit was motivated by a high regard of the Australian Electoral Commission and the many staff that run our democracy. The AEC is internationally known for its support of emerging democracies and its close collaboration with partner electorate agencies. This reputation enables the Australian government to include electoral support as a key element of development assistance, including to countries like Fiji, Papua New Guinea, and the Republic of the Marshall Islands. The Albanese Labor government believes that Australia has an important role in supporting the development of free and fair democracies, and I'm proud that the AEC plays such a key role in this regard.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Billick, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. And I thank the Minister for that answer as well. Australians are rightly proud of their electoral system and the strength of our democracy. Can the Minister update the Senate on what the Albanese Labor government is doing to make our system even stronger?
Minister.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Billick for her second supplementary question. The Australian electoral system is the envy of the world, but it can and should be strengthened. The Albanese Labor government has been clear that we will legislate reforms in response to the recommendations of the recent Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters inquiry. I'm consulting across the parliament and continue to invite any parliamentarian with an interest in strengthening our democracy to consult with the government on our proposed reforms. Unlike some in this parliament, we intend to progress reforms to strengthen our democracy rather than simply grandstand. It is clear that we must stop billionaires attempting to buy our elections, and I look forward to support across the parliament to achieve this aim.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Little.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister for Trade and Tourism, Senator Farrell. Official documents obtained under Freedom of Information request show that the South Australian State Minister for Trade and Investments Office approached your office to secure a meeting with local business Citadel Secure, and that a meeting was agreed to by your Chief of Staff. Minister, have you or anyone from your office had meetings with Citadel Secure and or any of its clients? And if yes, who attended these meetings and when did they occur?
Thank you, Senator Little. Minister Farrell.
Well, Senator Liddell, I'm very disappointed that you've asked this question days out from an important by-election in South Australia where the people of Dunstan are going to have to choose a replacement for the former Premier. This is grubby. This is really, really... Well, the answer is no. The answer is no. The answer is no. But this is really, really grubby politics. This is really, really grubby politics. And can I say this, Senator Liddell? This is below you. This is below you.
Senator Little, first supplementary.
Thank you. Minister, has your office or department been provided with any documents pitching for government funding associated with meeting requests? And has any disclosure of lobbying activities on behalf of Citadel Secure been required? Not asking you to like the question.
Minister, I haven't called you. Thank you, Senator Little. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. This gets grubbier. This gets grubbier and grubbier. The answer, the absolute answer to this is no. This is not the way I behave in this job. I've tried to lift the standards in this place, and the standards I expect from everybody else, I apply to myself. And these questions are below you, Senator. Don't get involved in that. That's my advice. Don't get involved in this grubby activity that's going on in the State Parliament of South Australia.
Senator Little, second supplementary.
My question was not about to seek your advice, but can you advise the Senate what role Ms. Critazita O'Hanlon, then Labor Party staffer, now Labor Party candidate, and Associate Director of Citadel Secure, played in seeking or securing access to your office? Have you or anyone in your office had any engagement with Ms. O'Hanlon regarding Citadel Secure? And was it no to all of those questions?
Thank you, Senator Little. Minister Wong.
I'd ask you to take advice from the clerk whether or not a question about a candidate in a state by-election is actually relevant to the minister's portfolio. It really does bell the cat that the opposition is now days out from a state by-election seeking to ask a direct personal question about an individual, who you were happy to name and you were happy to go in this place.
I'd ask you to get advice. I will seek the advice of the clerk. Senator Birmingham.
President, on the point of order, the questions were...
Just a moment, Senator Birmingham. Order on my left. Senator Birmingham.
The questions were directed to Senator Farrell in his capacity as Minister for Trade and Tourism. It was relying upon Freedom of Information documents which indicate that a meeting between this company had been agreed to by his Chief of Staff. It is entirely within order for senators to ask ministers questions about meetings they undertake and engagements they may or may not have with individuals seeking or advocating for those meetings or for funding.
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. I will seek the advice of the clerk. Thank you. I am advised that the question is in order, and given that the statements have been made, it's also an opportunity for the minister to respond to those statements. Minister Farrell.
Well, thank you, President. And can I be very, very clear, absolutely crystal clear, that there has been no contact between my office and anybody associated with Citadel Secure, including the very fine candidate for the Labor Party in the seat of Dunstan. I again reiterate that these are grubby tactics. They are tactics that you're prepared to use, Senator Liddell, under parliamentary privilege. If you're so confident that something wrong has occurred, make these statements outside of this place. Make them so Cressida O'Hanlon can defend herself in defamation proceedings because absolutely nothing you say, absolutely nothing you say is true. Say it outside of Parliament. If you think this is right, you say it outside of Parliament.
Order. Senator Wong.
Thank you, President. I ask that further questions be placed on notice.
Thank you.